Jimbo Paris, and you are listening to the Jimbo Paris Show. All right, how's it going, everyone? This is Jimbo Paris here. Today we have Fred. He is an author, keynote speaker, motivational speaker, and he's here to give us a bit of a gist on, you know, the culture of improving the attitude of the everyday employee. So let's see what he has to say.
Well, hello, Jimbo. How the heck are you doing today?
Great, great. I love the tie.
I'm doing fine. You already look like you're in a good attitude. So where are you located? You're up in
Baltimore, Maryland.
Maryland. Okay, great. And I think Katrina's like over in the Philippines. How did that happen?
Very long story.
Okay. Yeah, I really appreciate you having me on. I'm honored. I love talking about changing people's attitude. My whole prospect about life is change your attitude. You can change your life. You can change it to the negative side just by changing your attitude. And you can also change it to the positive side just by changing your attitude. Everything I do, I center it around attitude. And it makes it, it applies to everything you do. Everything I do, it revolves around attitude.
So speaking of who you are, kind of give me a gist of, you know, who you are, what you're about, and what your message is. I'd love to know.
Okay. 77 years old. Throughout life, I've been everything from a paper boy, cut yards when I was, you know, 11, 12 years old, bus boy. I've been an electrician a lot in construction most of my life. I went to work here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area to two prominent big companies. One was Texas Instruments. The other one was Raytheon. I worked for them for 22 years in maintenance. I started out as an electrician. Then I became a supervisor, Six Sigma expert. I did a lot of training and teaching in ethics, safety, and Six Sigma. And I love sharing what I've learned. And I've learned by trial and error, mostly by the mistakes I've made. They're the best teacher in the world. I've learned by those mistakes. Things that I've learned just by being on the job, how important a person's attitude is. I was a musician for 25 years in El Paso, Texas. That's where I was born and raised. And I still love playing music. And I think music is an international language forever. So you can't beat music for changing a person's attitude. And what it's got me to where I am now, I've written four books, three of them. One of them is called Success with an Attitude. The other is called Health with an Attitude. And this one I've just released called Leadership with an Attitude. Then I was in with Mike Rodriguez and five other authors. We did a book called A Better Plan. And that was, they've all been nicely successful. I've been very pleased with the results and the ability to share with other people.
What do you like to share?
Well, my opinion and my results about attitude. That's the main thing. How important a person's attitude. I'm blessed by being able to do a lot of assisted living homes and senior communities. And I love most of all doing my attitude seminars because a lot of folks, especially in that they start reaching elderly ages and stuff, they start thinking, well, it's all done. I'll just sit back and, you know, let que sera, sera, whatever will be, and they'll just kind of let the day go on. And I love to go in and see their faces when I start inspiring them, motivating them, and telling them, hey, you're not done yet. I'm 77. I'm still writing books. I'm singing. I'm doing singing concerts, hopefully doing them live again during this COVID stuff. And I said, you're not done. Start, do something. Whatever it is you feel like you want to do, do it. Get these people motivated, especially about their health. And my book, Health with an Attitude, and my seminars, Health with an Attitude, I love sharing that with everybody I can because your attitude has so much to do with how healthy you are, or if you have a health issue, how important it is and how helpful it is to build your immune system back up and make you feel better, healthier, faster, quicker, and better. Attitude's important.
What is attitude?
Okay. Well, you're sitting there. What do you think? When you got up this morning, how did you feel? Happy, tired? Oh, well, I got this to do today.
A little bit even keel.
Yeah. Okay. So you get up and you can go one way or the other. So say you get up, you look down, you walk outside and you got a flat tire.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? You're not going to go anywhere until you fix it. It's the same way with your attitude. You're not going to have a successful day if you're not going to fix your attitude. You can start out here, you can either be down or you can be up a little bit. Whatever it is, I encourage people to change your attitude. Everybody's, well, I'm, you know, Tom Ziegler, Zig Ziegler's son, dubbed me the attitude guru. And I try to live up to it. And everybody's, well, you're always up. No, I'm not. I get up the same way you get. I get up, things, I didn't sleep good. I worry about this. Something's coming up. Watch the news for 2 minutes and you're already in a bad mood. And right away, I got to change my attitude. And you have to do that by saying positive affirmations like, you know what? Don't matter what, we're going to get through this. It's going to be a better day. My wrist just flaring up on me. Something's going on. My health is this, or I feel tired. I got a headache. It's going to get better. When you start saying those things out loud, changing your attitude to a positive mental state, your chemical balance changes. Your body starts responding. The endorphins are released, serotonin, melatonin, all of these chemicals start making you feel better. Healing, your endorphins are a cell healer. Just change your attitude. That's what your attitude's about. It's about your mood and your mindset. You make better decisions when you're in a good mood. You make positive decisions. Zig always said, having a positive attitude or having positive thinking will not allow you to do everything, but it will allow you to do everything better than a negative attitude. That's just common sense. When you're in a good mood, things move a lot quicker. You can solve problems easier. Your frame of mind is better. You're more relaxed. When you're in a bad mood, it's hard to think. Your mind's all cloudy. You're worried about too many things. Too many things cloud your decision, and they start to inhibit your body being healthier. That's it. That's what attitude is. It's everything. A thing by Chuck Sindel, he wrote a week-long thing about attitude, how important it was. And his the ending statement is, your life, your attitude revolves around your attitude, because it's 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. And if you're 90% of reacting to whatever situation it is negative or in a bad mood, your results aren't going to be near the same or as successful as if you do it with a positive attitude. That's your attitude. Make sense? Yeah.
So how did attitude improve your life?
Every day. 33 years ago, I was walking along. I had a pain in my left ankle. Thought, God, what is that? It really swelled up, felt bad. And so I took 2 aspirin. Pain went away. 4 hours later, the pain came back. 2 more aspirin. 5 hours later, pain came back. 2 more aspirin. I did that for about a month. And then I got a pain in my side. And I thought, what is this? And I thought, well, that 2 more aspirin is not going to help that. So I went to the doctor, and he said, well, we're going to put you in the hospital and run some tests. So they ran some tests, and what they found out was I had a duodenal ulcer. And the doctor said, you know that aspirin you've been taking? I said, yes, sir. She said, quit taking it. It was uncoated, and it was eating a hole in my stomach. So I said, okay, I can do that. So I quit taking the aspirin. 2 days later, when I woke up, every bone, every joint in my body hurt so bad. I never felt that kind of pain all over my body. I moved my finger, blinked my eyes, everything hurt. I went back to the doctor, and I asked him, what's going on? So we ran a few more tests, found out I had serious case of debilitating rheumatoid arthritis. And I said, well, okay, doc, what does debilitating mean? And he said, well, Fred, he painted me a pretty nasty picture. He says, it's not going to go away, and it's only going to get worse. No, man, what do you mean? He said, well, in a couple of years, you're probably going to have some hip replacements, and your bones are going to deteriorate, and you're going to get all deformed. And I said, what? Well, I've always been blessed with a good attitude. I always look for the silver lining. I'm not just the half, the glass is always half full to me. I always know the glass can be refilled. Okay. So it's always from half full to filling it back up again. And so I looked at that doctor. I said, no, it's not. I am not going to let this arthritis, whatever it is, take control of me. I'm going to take control of that. I'm going to do everything that you ask me to do. I'm going to take the medication. I'm going to exercise, whatever it takes. But I'm going to fight it with this, my heart, my soul, and my brain, and my attitude. So every day I would say, my body's going to beat this arthritis. It's going to not let it take over my body. And I say these things out loud because saying things out loud, you hear it, your brain hears it, and your brain starts reacting to it. So here it is 33 some odd years later. every doctor I've talked to says, you know what, it's really amazing. Says you responded to all the treatments, everything like that. And your attitude has played a major role in your, you know, this longevity of not succumbing to this severe case of arthritis. And I approach everything I do that same way. This is going to be a good day. This is going to be a great day. Oh, this happened. Air conditioner goes out. Oh, let's get it. Let's find a way to find a solution. There's a solution. There's a silver lining here. Now, the air conditioner didn't catch on fire and burn my house down. Let's get a new air conditioner and find a way to do it. If it's a money problem, then find a way to make a few dollars more and get it paid for. Your attitude is important. And I was in, like I said, construction most of my life. And I've seen some horrible accidents. I've even been the cause of some. So safety is important. But safety, I tell in my safety seminars, I say, safety is not just a big bunch of set of rules and regulations. It's about going home to your family with all your toes, all your fingers, both your eyes. God forbid you go to the hospital or the morgue. And it's about everybody's personal responsibility. Safety is not on a company's fault. It's not their total responsibility. They have to put the rules and regulations out there. But you, every one of us out here have to follow those rules so we can go home to our wives and our husbands and our kids. It's our responsibility. So everything we do about finances, relationships, attitude. That's why attitude is my main mantra.
Was your attitude always good?
Most of the time, when I was a kid, you know, we didn't have much money growing up. My parents were divorced when I was 11. And we would go around where some of these construction sites were. We'd find all pieces of wood and bent nails and stuff like that. We'd build things. We'd always look for stuff to do. We didn't just sit and say, oh, well, we don't have anything. We always managed to have, you know, some Campbell's soup or some bologna sandwiches for lunch or something. You know, there was food somewhere. My mom struggled a lot, and God bless her for what she did for us, me and my sisters, two kids. And we did fine. And like at that age, too, my friend and I, we'd get enough. The old push mowers, they weren't power mowers. We'd go out and mow yards and like a pair of hand clippers and trim yards for a buck and a half, you know. But we made enough money to buy, you know, model airplanes to build or something to buy or help out some way. But there was always... I don't know if you remember the Little Rascals or the Our Gang comedy. You remember, you know, gosh, they would always go up and down the alleys, this whole group of kids, and they would do the same thing. They'd make their own fun. They'd create a better attitude. They wouldn't just whine and complain. They would create their own attitude.
So, how do you create an attitude?
Well, change your mindset. If you're sitting there thinking, I'm bored, there's nothing to do. This is a powerful tool. Start thinking of, well, what could I do since I'm bored? There's nothing to do here. What else can I do? And you know what? You know as well, you're an IT guy, right? Right? And this would kind of be started in both your these shows you do, which I'm going to ask you a little bit about. Those are great. You got two of them going. And what happens, we're in the age of this technology, and these kids are smarter than we are with these computers. Punch Google something, whatever it is. What can I do about being bored? I'll bet you they couldn't handle all the information. Somewhere in there, there's something you like, something she likes, something somebody else likes, something they could do. Oh, I could do this. I could do that. I could do that. It's not up to the world to make you happy, to create, to change your attitude, to give you everything. It's up to the individual to find out who they are, what they like to do. Try different things, create their own mindset. And then with that, your attitude always automatically starts getting better. That's how you change it. You have to be proactive in it. You can't just sit and wait for it to come to you. You have to do something about it. Best thing to ask yourself is, what can I do?
So now you're getting into the idea of passions. How did you begin to find your first set of passions, especially when you started to run those small businesses?
Well, first passion I had was music. I always liked, you know, I'd always see these play guys in a band playing guitars and stuff like that. So I thought, that's what I want to do. And I love being a musician. I love being on stage. I love entertaining people, whether it's singing, doing a speech, sharing my knowledge, or just plain telling jokes. I love telling stories, and I love telling stories with an Irish accent. It's always so much more fun. But I love making people enjoy themselves. And so with that kind of, the passion I had to become a musician was paramount. And I had an old guitar. My sister took some steel guitar lessons, had this old crummy little wooden guitar that they had the bridge raised up on it. And she took a few lessons, and I'd go down there and watch. And then she quit taking the lessons. I'd look at that guitar and I think, if you take that tall bridge out and do it, how do you tune it up to make a regular guitar? And here I am about 12, 13 years old. And I asked a few people. They said, here's what you do. Went to a music store down the street from me. Here's how to tune it up. Okay. Here's a couple of chords. E, A, E, and B. That's all you need, you know. C, D, and F. C, G, and F. Yeah. Those three chords got me started. I self-taught myself how to play. Started doing a thing, and that led to getting another guy, a friend of mine. We both played guitars together. We got a drummer and started a three-piece group because there was passion and a desire. And that's why you have to find your own passion. You know, they'd say, well, what are you passionate about? I don't know. And you find ladies. You find these ladies that are doing crocheting or you know, sewing these blankets, making these quilts. They have a passion for it. So what you have to find and look for the things that make you happy. And you'll know if you start looking for them, you'll find them. Do you like doing these shows? Do you like doing what you do, Jim? You like to be of called course. Jim, Jimbo, or James?
Just call me Jimbo. Call me Jimbo. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Sure. You have a passion for it. And that's why you're good at it and why it's successful.
That's why I'm on episode 83.
There you go. And so I'm talking, dude, you have to have that passion. How did you find that? Did you just sit and wait for it to come to you?
I had to do work.
There you go. And you think, I like doing this. I like riding horses. I like training horses. I like doing this. I like swimming. I like teaching swimming. I like whatever. It doesn't matter what it is. I love to create, period. I like to write songs. I like to write books. I like to write jokes. I like to paint. Bob Ross on TV, remember his paintings and everything?
Yeah, the guy with the afro. Yeah,
with the afro hair. I loved it. Yeah, great. And I got a couple of pictures around the house that I painted because of him. I feel proud of them because they look pretty darn good. It's this act of doing things. You find things that you like to do them. And when you can do them well and you get better at it and create an income from it, oh my gosh, what a blessing that is. You know, I've been doing these seminars through COVID the last 2 years with this crazy COVID stuff. Thanks to this media, I got a Zoom account. I do all over Texas. I do Zoom presentations of safety with an attitude, leadership with an attitude, safety with an attitude, you know, health with an attitude, faith with an attitude. All my seminars are done that way. So it's, gosh. And what did I have to do when COVID hit and I couldn't do them live? Here's the internet. I had to learn how to get on. How do you do Zoom? What do you do this? How do you create an account? What do you do? So that's, and I'm 77. They say, well, I'm too old for this internet stuff. No, you're not. You don't have to be an expert. You don't have to know how to fix it or get in and do things. All you have to do is know how to use it. And now that if you can get in on the internet just a little bit, you can YouTube anything and they'll teach you how to do, they'll teach you how to change the brakes on your car. You know, doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. So there's no excuse. If you want to, if you have a desire to, you can do it. And if you have that attitude, a positive attitude will let you do that. A negative attitude, it won't.
So we talked a lot about your entrepreneurship, but what about being an author? How did your attitude impact that?
I've always wanted to write, and I like, you know, especially writing songs and music, and that's great. But I wanted to say, what can I write? And I tried writing a novel. I thought, well, I might in the future, and I'm still working on that. But that's something I didn't feel like I could do. But I started out with doing a thing called Success with an Attitude because I was going through a drive-in, one of these fast food restaurants. And, you know, you talk to the squawk backs over there, you know, and they answer back. You can't understand. And I knew the kid on the other side wasn't listening. So when I got up to the window, I drove off, I opened the bag. Everything was wrong. I thought, all right, I said all the wrong things. And then, so stupid, dumb, what's wrong with these kids? This started blankety blank. God touched me on the shoulder and says, well, do something about it. I said, what do you mean do something about it? What am I going to do? You've taught stuff at work. your teacher, your trainer, you have a good attitude. What can you show these kids? He said, they're good kids. Nothing wrong with them. They're just not taught how to be polite, how to say yes or no, sir, how to pay attention, how to listen. It's a couple of simple skills. I said, I could do that. So I started out writing a seminar on it so I could go to high schools and stuff like that, maybe teach it. And the more I wrote down the seminar and did the PowerPoint to it, I said, I could take each one of these foils that I've written, one of these, I wrote 10 simple skills, people skills. And I said, I could put this in a book form. So I started writing a book. And luckily, I got tied into a group of people that is phenomenal. I know you're familiar with the name Zig Ziglar, aren't you? Zig Ziglar.
Zig what?
Zig Ziglar. He was a global motivational speaker.
Zig Ziglar. The name sounds familiar. Yeah.
Just Google him, and he's got 100,000 quotes out. He's up there with Ken Blanchard, you know, Jim Rohn, all of these folks, Brian, all of these folks. So he's a highly valued, positive mental attitude guy. And I called his office. I found out it was here in Dallas, and I called his office and I said, you know, can I sit down and talk to this guy? Because I love his tapes and all these training material. And the lovely lady, Lori Mager, said, no, I can't get you in to see Zig. He's pretty busy, but I can get you in to see his right-hand man, which was Brian Flanagan. So I went to his office and interviewed with him. And he introduced me to a lady that did a lot of book stuff with the book publishing. And through that, I found some other connections and I got my book published, Success with an Attitude. And all it is about 10 simple skills on how to improve, you know, get employed for one, how to stay employed, how to get better raises, how to do all these things. And it came out pretty good. And I started doing a thing on health for these seniors at these seniors communities. And same thing, I can write a book on that. Leadership, same thing. I'm working on two others that I'm going to be working on for a while here, and I hope to do at least one of them this year and one next year. This last one, leadership, is just found out that I hear everybody complaining. I'm not a boss or anything like that. I can't be the leader. And I tell them, I said, no, you know what? You don't have to be the boss to be a leader. You can be a janitor. You can be the guy that takes care of the lawn outside, the landscape guy. You can be a painter on the team of mechanics that keep the building running. You can be an administrative assistant. And they all say, oh, I'm just this. I'm not a leader. I was just an electrician, but I was proud of what I did. And so when I did my work and the people saw how I bent pipes and made everything look good and took pride in putting a panel together, all of a sudden, they looked to me as a leader in that field. I didn't have to be a leader or anything like that. And you know what? Next thing I know, they were asking me to be a group leader. Then I became a supervisor and then bump down a Six Sigma expert. And then I became, you know, into the management field. And it's a lot of people don't want to be a leader. They don't want to be a supervisor thing. But unbeknownst to them, you can be the best janitor in your field. And I had one of the guys on the cleaning crew ask, well, how do you do that on one of the companies? I said, well, do you have a computer? Yeah. You get on the internet? Yeah. Just Google how to be the best janitor, how to be a good janitor. And I've done that with every position out there. Tons of things came, hacks on what cleaning fluids to use. What's the best way to clean a mirror? What's the best way to make a floor shine and make it stay that way longer? All of a sudden, you become a leader in that field and all the other janitors and people on the cleaning crew start looking at you like, how do you do that? You become a leader in your field. The value you add to every company is important. And in leadership with an attitude, like I said, I'm busting the myth that you don't have to be the boss to be a leader. So that if you go, if you want a job done and you're looking for a company to do it, and you drive up into the parking lot and the parking lot has holes in the driveway and it's a mess, the yard's not mowed. You walk up to the door and the door handle's kind of loose and you open it and it kind of, you walk in and the first person you see on the desk is, yeah, can I help you? All of a sudden, do you want to do business with them? No. So I tell everybody from the ground up to the CEO, every position, every person in this company is valuable. They add value. They add strength. And your position is valuable. So don't think of yourself, oh, I'm just a. No, you're not just a. You're a valuable part of this corporation. Without you, this company will not be successful. And the more successful you are in your position, the more successful the company is going to be. So it's just value added to every person out there. And I've had a lot of guys tell me and gals tell me, so I used to think I was just a file clerk, but now I know that if I file this right, everything's going to work fine. It's just, it's simple. It's a simple equation. So that's the passion of what I do. I love showing people that they're important. You're important with what you do. You probably don't realize that you've probably touched, in 83 episodes, you've probably touched more lives than you can even realize it. You know what? I was watching the Jimbo Paris show the other day. You had this idiot on there talking about attitude. But you know, he's right. Maybe I'm going to change my attitude. But see, you're touching lives that you don't, we call it the pebble in the pond. It sends out ripples. You never know what your statement's going to touch, what your show is going to add value to. And I've looked at a couple of your shows, and I'll tell you what, you bring on a variety of people that touch different people. My show today probably won't touch everybody, but it's going to touch somebody out there, and they'll touch somebody, and they'll touch somebody. That's what I mean. Your advice and the things that you share and the things that you do well are of value to everybody else around you.
And to get back to you, though, I think my fascination is, what's your ripple effect? You're a 76-year-old man, you know. You seem to impact a lot of people with your four books and your multiple businesses. What effect are you most proud of?
Okay, I can, several different ways. One, if I'm doing a live performance, which I love to do, because you know well, probably in your status too, being in front of a live audience is you get feedback instantly. So when I'm there and I'm talking about motivating people about their health, and I see some of these seniors sit up and think, shaking their heads, and some of them take notes, but some of them come up afterwards and they say, I needed that kind of message today. I've been down in the dumps. I get up in the morning and right away I says, oh, I just feel terrible. It's terrible. And they go through the whole day that way. So, and when I've come back and done other seminars at the same place, I've had people come back up to me and say, you know what? I've been practicing what you do. I put a list up on my mirror and I said, today's going to be a good day. Whatever issue I had, I got migraines. Well, my migraines are going to be better. It's really helped. It's not a cure-all, but changing your attitude helps. Same with safety. I don't know if you were privileged to go to any safety meetings at any corporation you worked at, were you?
Well, no.
Okay. Well, luckily, if you've ever been to some of them, they're a necessary evil. And they're about as boring as watching paint dry. You can sit there, watch a fly crawl up a drape, and that's more exciting than some of these training sessions. But they got to have them. And what I tell a lot of these companies, cities, and corporations is that every training session has a nugget in it. Somewhere along the line is going to help somebody be safer. Mm-hmm. So, and I encourage these workers and stuff, because I've not even gone to these training sessions. I've taught some of them. And they're the most boring things to teach in the world. It's terrible. But I tell them, what nugget can you get out of that? If you go to a training session that's an hour long, if you've got 2 minutes of valuable information out of that, it's going to make a difference in you going home tomorrow night with both your eyes. I ask them, I say, hey, do you go home and play catch with your kid or something like that? Oh, yeah. So, well, do you realize that if you don't wear your safety goggles or you don't do this right, you put your eyes out? You can't do that anymore. It's not about the company's rules and regulations, it's about you and your family. God, it's just everything. So the reward I get is when I see somebody change their attitude and do better at what they do, be proud of what they do, be healthier because of what they do, or what I said, the knowledge I've gained, what I've given back to them. I didn't come up with all this knowledge myself. It's just stuff I've learned and regurgitated. I'm just giving it back out that I've learned. So like you said, in 77 years, if nothing but mistakes, you've learned a lot. And so sharing that knowledge is that's a reward. When I write a book and I see somebody out there, I go to my account and I see, hey, I sold another couple of books today. Somebody's going to read that book or share it with somebody. It's somewhere in there. They're going to figure out that's what I need to do. That's my ripple effect. I know that I don't know how many people I've touched. I hope it's a gazillion. That's my legacy that I want to leave.
Excellent, excellent. And what are some of your best success stories that you've gotten from people that you've touched?
One lady, speaking of health, because I talked about, you know, I would go to this one big hospital here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area that has a training group. Every Friday morning at 7:30 in the morning, they would have some oncologist, a cancer specialist, come into the hospital and give this big, long lecture. I would go diligently for a long time and take notes. What they talked about was way over my head. I didn't understand a word they said. But what I did understand was I would go up there. The main purpose for me being there was to go there and say, how important is the attitude of your patients in the treatment of cancer? You never guess what they said. They said, hands down, everyone that has a positive attitude or approaches it with a good mood or good mindset, they respond much better to the radiation treatment, chemotherapy. They recover from cancer more quickly, faster, quicker, and better than those with a negative attitude. And so my reward, the success story, was a couple of folks have come up to me that they were going through some serious cancer treatments. And they would come up and say, you know what? When I went to my next chemotherapy session and my radiation treatment, I went in there with the mindset is instead of, oh God, I'm going to be sick after this. Oh, I'm going to be terrible. More hair is going to fall out. It's not a good experience. But they went in with the attitude that I'm going to go in and change my mindset. I'm going to stand up straight. I'm going to change my physical, my chemistry in my body. I'm going to go in there with the fact that this is going to help me beat this cancer. And I'm going to go through whatever it takes to get through this chemotherapy, radiation treatment. And I'm going to come out, I'm going to walk out of here knowing that it helped me. They started responding better and not being as sick as they were after these radiation treatments and therapy. God, why, geez, because of something I said? You don't think that just made me feel great? Other success stories. I love playing music. And we were in El Paso, Texas. There was a club called the Knights Club at a roadway inn that was near the airport. It was a very prominent club. And we had a group called the Sixth Column. And we were the house band there for 13 years, four nights a week. I had a daytime job being an electrician that I'd go at night, four nights a week and play music. People would come and have a good time. People would come and whatever their cares were, whatever they were working about doing that day or whatever, they'd come there, we'd have fun. I love telling the story, joke with them on the stage, and the whole group was great. And being the kingpin of that group, and the hardest part about a band is keeping everybody happy and, you know, motivated and together. And we did great for 13 years. We did a fantastic job there and had a good following. And I know we made a lot of people happy. They'd always come and say, oh, you play this song, play that. It's so, and other bands would come and say, God, I wish we could do what you're doing there at the same club. So it's just those kind of success stories. Plus being at work at TI and Raytheon for 22 years, they always talk to me. I always whistled all the time, up and down the hallway. Yes, whistle all the time. A few people didn't like it, but you can't please everybody. But most of the people, even the group leaders and the presidents and vice presidents of separate sections of these pretty high, this is a huge corporation. They'd always say, you know what? I hear you going up and down the hallway and everything you do, you're always positive. You always make people, I hear you whistling up and down the hallway. And I think, there goes that guy again. And they get a smile on their face. Those kind of ripples, you can't help but make you feel good that you've changed their attitude for nothing. It's like when you walk up to somebody in a grocery store or Walmart or something, and the guy or gal at the register, you know, they're not in a good mood or something. You walk up, hey, hi, how are you doing today? You're doing a good job here. Boom, all of a sudden, you smile at them. All of a sudden, you change their attitude. Those are the kind of ripples I helped create, that I try to create.
You've been doing music for about 25 years, so that must be a serious passion of yours.
Oh, God, I love music. And just recently, in El Paso, I started doing the singles act that I just did pre-recorded music, almost like karaoke on it. I put on a show, you know, I put on my suit and everything and do singing. And I do a Little Vegas show that Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, you know, those kind of songs, a lot of Neil Diamond and Elvis. I also do a tribute to Elvis. I'm not an Elvis impersonator, but I sing pretty good. And I get the song across, and I do a tribute to him, to Buddy Holly, and I'm working on a date with Diamond, a lot of Neil Diamond songs, which I loved. And I'm working on another one, Roy Orbison. If you get a chance, I know you like music, so go out there and watch a little bit of over an hour of Roy Orbison, Black and White. Got Bruce Springfield. It's got all these other, a whole group of famous musicians all got together for this. Kind of, and then Roy Orbison does a job, and it's just fantastic artist. And putting a group like that. But what I'm trying to do is get back in after this COVID starts settling down a little bit, start doing the singles thing that I love to do for these seniors at these assisted living homes. You cannot find a better audience. They love having people come in, and I love to joke with them, sing to them, and watch a lot of these people with dementia and Alzheimer's. Jimbo, all of a sudden you watch their mouths start moving. They start to remember. They start singing the words along with you. Hmm. They start, there's a little bit of sparkle in their eye. There's a little bit more of a connection there because music, it creates memories. It brings memories forth. And just seeing them get up and enjoy the music and have fun. I love performing. I just want to be a good singer. I just want to entertain, whether it's doing a speech, sharing my knowledge, whether it's telling jokes, which I love to do, or singing, entertaining. Just being an entertainer is what I want to be.
Forgive me if this is a bit of a mundane question, but okay. What's the difference between a speaker and an entertainer?
Okay. A speaker gets up and can impart knowledge, can share thoughts, give a great speech on a PowerPoint or whatever they're teaching, whatever they came to tell you about. But an entertainer gets up there and just effervesces. Their attitude, their passion, their desire, their knowledge doesn't just speak it, doesn't just be a speaker there. As a speaker, if you can emote feelings, passions, and inspire people, encourage them, not just educate them, that's what a speaker does. But if you can be a speaker and entertainer, all those together, that's what makes these keynote speakers desirable. You can evoke passion, inspiration, motivation, and encouragement. That's the difference. And making them laugh, that's a plus. Not just motivating, inspiring, encourage them, but you can make them giggle and laugh all of a sudden. One of my main mentors was Zig Ziglar, and he'd always tell me, Fred, about every 7 minutes or something, and you're doing a serious thing here, tell a joke, tell a story, break it up. People start thinking about what you just said on the serious side, and it's either taking notes, and they start thinking, what can I do on this? Wait a minute, he's telling a joke. So you start listening to the joke. You laugh a little bit, which laughter is the best medicine. It releases endorphins, all these chemicals, changing your mindset. All of a sudden, they refocus on you and what you're saying next. So it's just a given. And I love entertaining. I love telling stories. And you can tell I'm not bashful. My wife says, he says, you're such a ham. She says, if I open the door to the refrigerator in the dark kitchen and the light comes on, I'll do a 20-minute show. Just having the spotlight on you. All of a sudden, I become the entertainer. I start trying to entertain, share knowledge, do whatever it takes to make that people around me happy.
Well, you know, there's something I do find quite entertaining, and it's that you have an array of images behind you.
Yes.
Catching my attention a bit, as you are too. But what's going on there? You like ships?
I love tall sailing ships. If you look up my book, Leadership with an Attitude, on Amazon, yeah. If you see the cover is a tall sailing ship, three-masted schooner. And what it is about sailing ships that it excites me is that it's always been forever a symbol of power, of forward. Yeah, see, there, thanks, Jimbo. And it's just a symbol of power, moving forward, a way to change your sails. If you're going the wrong directions, you got to change your sails to go. Whatever we're doing in life, you got to change your sails to move with that direction. So when I look at those sails and I see power in ships and all of these plates, these are some of those. They come with a certificate of authenticity, by the way. They're not worth a darn except to me. They're beautiful plates. They have beautiful ships on it. And the picture in the middle is a ship. And if you notice over here, I guess over this way, over here on this side, that's a picture of course, USS Enterprise, Captain Kirk. Yeah. And of course, on the other side is my piano and my guitar is over there. And I still, play music. I still love to write songs. And so the sailing ship is just a symbol of power, moving forward, changing your sails when you need to change direction, and teamwork. That ship cannot go anywhere without a crew knowing exactly what they need to trim the mainsail. You watch these sailing contests on TV and stuff. You know, they have these big, huge yacht things going on. This crew has got to be sharp. They got to be on the button. Same way with those ships back then. You had to have that teamwork. You had to have that group of people around you that make that ship go. So that's why the ship to me is just positive. And these guys behind me, they just encourage me. I walk, I can, I sit in my living room over there with this door to my study here, and I can look through there, can see these plates on the wall. I always look at them, I always smile. It just makes me feel good. So that's the story behind those guys.
So what's the future?
Oh, future is, like I said, I've already started an outline on two more books. One is called Faith with an Attitude, which I love doing. It's all on faith, biblical faith. And it's based on the Bible. And I love doing that on Sundays at these assisted living homes or churches and things like that. I love doing that because it's just, and it's a lot of fun with attitude. I tell jokes all throughout my seminars. And if you read my books, all of my books, at the end of each chapter, I have a lecture, Time to Laughter. Laughter is the best medicine. I'll tell a joke. And I do the same thing on my seminars. So I've already got outlines for those two books. One is called America with an Attitude. We're going through such a crazy time again. We've gone through it before, like a roller coaster. But there's some issues out there that I'd love to say, hey, you could change this just by changing the attitude of everything. I'm not even going to go into that because there's too much to that. But that's what I'm already doing. It's funny because on the music side of it, over in London, a group of people put albums together, and they put three albums. And it's all about surfing music in the past. Dick Dale, Ventures, and all these instrumentals used to be way back when. You kind of remember that, you might do. Well, in 1963, in El Paso, in a little bitty radio studio, we did a song called Bacardi. It's an instrumental. That's a catchy tune. It's a lot of fun. It was number four on the charts locally for about 6 weeks. Like, great thing. And I love doing it. Well, they wanted to put that song on the album three of Surf is Turf. And all of a sudden, here we are. A song we did in 1963 is on an album out with a bunch like Dick Dale and the Ventures and a few of these others. So it's like, it's just, if you just keep going, nothing quits. The legacy we leave is the things we do and keep doing. They say, well, you're retired now. I said, no. Do you remember reading any of the Chicken Soup for the Soul books? You've heard about them, right? Yeah.
What's that? It sounds interesting.
It's a whole volume now. Two authors, Mark Victor Hansen and Jack Canfield wrote it. And it's just a whole bunch of stories within there. But Mark Victor Hansen, he had a saying, I love doing this because like, I'm 77. They say, well, you know, you're getting up kind of old there. You know, what are you going to do? And he would always tell people, says, I'm going to live till I'm 125 years old with an option to renew. So that's my attitude. I'm going to be kicking around doing something. I don't care what it is. If I can't do things live anymore, I got this right here that I can do. If I'm in a wheelchair, I can still do. There's nothing you can't do if you put your mind to it. So what's my plans for the future? Keep writing. Keep trying to inspire, motivate, and encourage people to have a better attitude to change your life, and especially these young kids. And, geez, because they're coming up, you know, they're facing a lot of issues out here. Change your attitude. It revolves around, oh, well, I'll probably fail this test today. Whoa, wait, don't say that. That's a negative. That all of a sudden your mind goes in, starts thinking negative, and you start to try to think of an answer. That door shuts up because you already told yourself, I'm going to fail this test. I probably won't pass it. You tell them, open up your mind. Just free yourself. Say, no, I'm a good student. I've studied this stuff. I'm not talking about the lame brain that just sat there last night eating donuts and watching movies. I'm talking about the guys and the gals that study. You know, they know it's in there. They have to release that knowledge and let it go, relax. And most of it's about their attitude. And I tell you, tell yourself, you're going to be a good student. You know the stuff. You're going to learn it. That's when you start making better decisions and the knowledge starts coming forward. See, I always had a saying, in my seminars, I say, if you plant corn, you're going to get corn. You know, if you're a farmer, if you have any wisdom of agriculture, if you plant corn, you're going to get corn. If you plant weeds and nettles, you're going to get weeds and nettles. If you put stupid negative thoughts in your mind, your body will react to it. I don't feel good today. Well, the hormones quit working, the pituitary gland kind of shuts down, your thyroid kind of relaxes and doesn't put out what you need. If you say, you know what, I'm going to feel good today. This is going to be great. I got a headache. But it's going to get better. I don't care about what you're feeling like now. Like you said, you get up and you're right about here. All of a sudden you say, you know what, I'm going to feel better than that. In a couple hours, I'm going to be great. After my first cup of coffee, you can't stop me. There you go. That's what changes your mindset. That's the passion that should keep you going for a long, long time, and anybody else out there. Doesn't matter.
What do you think impacted this generation versus your generation on attitude?
I believe that there's too much negativity in the media, in the news, that you can't escape. I don't care what you turn on. The media is not favorable to telling people good news. They look for the sensationalism. They always have. And they dwell on it, which they should balance it out with. There's tons and tons and tons of great things that are happening out in the world, but you don't hear about. All you hear about is the shootings, the drive-bys, the little baby who's killed in a crib. Oh, my God. You don't hear about, oh, my gosh, two firemen rushed in and saved six kids out of a burning fire. You know, very seldom do you hear all the good stuff. There's so much going on. That's good, the balance. And I believe that the kids nowadays are getting way more of it than we did. I mean, we had, when I was growing up, we had three channels on the TV and a channel changer. I was the remote. My dad would say, go change the channel, son. So, and we had news, and they would tell the stories. They would tell news. They'd keep you up to date. And I tell everybody, stay up to date. Just don't let it change your attitude. That, you know, not much. I cannot go over to Afghanistan, or I can't go over to anywhere. I cannot go over there and change the Ukrainian situation. I can't do anything. I can't pray for them. I can hope for the best, but I can't change it. So in my case, I say, God bless them. Please, let's get together. When I go vote, I'm going to try to vote the right, correct way to make sure that we get some people in there. We'll do the right things. That's what I can do. Other than that, I might as well go up and go to the refrigerator and fix myself a ham and cheese sandwich. You know, I can't do anything about that. So don't let it make you feel negative. You can't save the world. You can't change a lot of this negativity. So that's what I try to tell these kids. Don't let all of this negativity change your mind. I don't care what kind of neighborhood you grew up in. Like I said, I grew up, you know, we didn't have a whole lot, but it was up to me to create a better life. And it doesn't matter to me what race, creed, or color you are. I know there's difficulties in some, but it's just like a lot of the other folks say, well, no matter what color, creed they are, you can get out of it if you just want to get out of it. Do whatever it takes to get out of it. And it takes a lot of willpower, and it takes a good attitude. If you have a bad attitude about yourself, lowest self-esteem, then if you can't get yourself up out of it, then your destiny's not going to be as good as it should.
You're beginning to resonate a lot more with some of the other people I've interviewed. You talk a lot about taking responsibility in a way.
It's up to everyone. I don't know what you grew up in. I don't know your situation. But I knew I lived in El Paso, Texas, right on the border of Juarez, Mexico. And I worked with a lot of guys who would come across the border, go to work. Some of them had visas. Some of them were not legal. But they all came across. Why? They wanted to make themselves better. They came to a place where they knew they could work. They could make some money. They didn't just stand on the streets across the border and beg for money. They did something to make a difference in their lives and their family's lives. And they took responsibility for doing that. They didn't just sit and wait for that to come to them. You can't do that in this way. You couldn't. I don't care where you're from on this planet. I don't care what you do. You can't just wait for it to come to you. Most people were not born with a silver spoon in their mouth. They didn't get blessed with, you know, family riches. They had to work for it. I don't care what they had to do. They had to struggle, work. They had to go to school. They had to get an education. It was their responsibility. And the parents could take them up only so far. But then after that, you know, they can be responsible to their kids, but not for their kids. You know, gosh, they have to. There's a part where each person out there, I don't care race, creed, color, nationality, it doesn't matter. It's up to each individual to take responsibility. And for some people, race, creeds, and colors, it's a little more difficult. I got to admit that. I'm not dumb enough to say that. Because what it takes is a desire, because there's a lot of them, I don't care what race, creed, or color it is, that have become so successful. And why? If you read their history and their past, they didn't come up through the just giving it to them. They worked hard for it. They busted their buns to get to where they are. And some have to bust their buns worse. You know, I went to college, the Texas Western College then at the time. It's University of El Paso now, UTEP. But I went for 2 years, and I was not happy with the direction I was going. And I had to struggle to pay for that, even though it was a lot less back then. I had to struggle for those two semesters to pay for it. But when I realized that this isn't getting me anywhere, what else do I want to do? So I knew I was good with my hands, so I became an apprentice electrician. My dad was an electrician, so that's a good trade. So trade schools, if you don't want to go to college, please get into a trade school. We need carpenters, plumbers, electricians. We need painters. We need people that know what they're doing out there to rebuild America. So take responsibility. Do what you can do. And so because I had a journeyman, I learned to be learned my trade, and I became a journeyman electrician. As long as I had that license in my pocket, I could put beans on the table, period. There was always a need for an electrician here. If there wasn't here, there's one over there. There's always somebody was building something. And if you want to, and you're eager, and you do it diligently, you can find work. And now I guarantee you, there's a lot of cry for that right now. So it's up to that person to get up off the couch, go find out what they can do. But sometimes it might be what you want to do at the time. Do what you need to do to get to the next level. Yeah. And when you get there, then you can get to the next level, then the next level, the next level, the next level. I never thought I'd become a Six Sigma expert in a big, huge corporation like I did. I was out of 78,000 employees, I was an elite member of 1,000 of those folks in a special group of highly trained people that can lead a meeting. And I would lead, facilitate meetings. Like they're in this huge table. I have an admiral in the Navy on one end. I have a janitor on the other end. The secretary's here, a guy here, painter over here, mechanical, all these different people, and create a solution to a problem. I never dreamed I was going to do that. But like I said, start where you can, do what you can. And then pretty soon your journey will take you places you never dreamed of. But it's all about, oh, I get to do this. And another thing I like to preach about is a lot of people say, I got to drive in that stupid traffic today to get to work. This job is killing me. I hate this job sometimes. And I say, I got to go to work. I got to drive in this. Look, you have a car. Aren't you lucky? You have a car to drive. You get to go to work today in your car. I have a job. A lot of people don't. Wish they had. I get to go to work today. I get to do these things. I get. I'm able to. I get to. Not got to. I get to. I'm so blessed today. I'm honored to get to be on your show. And it to me, it's a pleasure.
Same here. And you get into another thing too, gratitude, which is also.
Yeah. Well, if you don't have another fine Zig Ziglar quote, you know, gratitude is the highest emotion, human emotion you could ever feel. And everybody should have an attitude of gratitude is what he says. If you have this thinking, you need a checkup from the neck up. And that's the more Ziglarisms to sink your teeth into. And if you're grateful for what you have now, just like I said, remember I told you we were kids, we'd go around up and down the alley and find pieces of wood, bent nails, try to straighten them out with a rock, just so we could build a little airplane or a car because we didn't have money to buy one. I was grateful that we had places we could go find wood and bent nails at. When you have that attitude of gratitude, you can grow a little bit. And when you say, this isn't exactly the place I wanted to live, but you know, if I nail this door up and close this shutter and paint this wall, it'll be better. I'm grateful I have a roof over my head. Going to school, I'd open up my lunch box. Oh, wow, I got a bologna sandwich in here. Grateful for what you have. And then pretty soon, later on, you're taking a lunch. You could buy a lunch, a hamburger at high school or something. You know, just that way. When we went on tour in 1968, we left El Paso, and we ended up in Chicago, Illinois, on tour, doing some tour, just looking for places to play. Our organ player that played the organ, he was from Chicago. He said, well, I know some people up there. So we got in our bus, and we had a nice 24-passenger school bus. We traded, made it into a band bus. We drove up to Chicago. Well, we were down to, we didn't have any money. We were all six of us. There was five members and then one guy that was a recording man. He would do the volumes and stuff, set the volumes out there. And we were down to nothing. We were living all in this one little bitty one room, one bathroom, motel room. It was just a shabby boy. It cost us $10 a day to stay there. And I wrote a song called 10, 33 days on $10 living. And at that point, we went out, we bought a huge bar of peanut butter and about four loaves of day-old bread. And we thought, well, we have jam sandwiches, two pieces of bread jammed together. We were broke. And then we finally found a club that they were going to hire us in about 2 weeks when the other band, we would go in after the other band would finish. We were set off to the side, off the stage. And we'd just play low, easygoing, slow music for dinner. Hmm. And we did that for an hour, so they would feed us a meal. So, you know, and we were grateful. Hey, wow, we got promises. We had a place to stay. Was it great? Was it hard? Was it tough? Oh, heck yeah. It was tough. But then finally we got a job there, and pretty soon we stayed there for 2 years and did rather well up there. But you got to be grateful for where you are. And that gratitude is part of your attitude. If you don't have a grateful attitude, then it's a deterrent to get past where you are. You're not going to grow if you don't have a good attitude. You're not grateful for what you have.
This is one of the final questions I like to ask. This has been an amazing interview. If you could go back in time and speak to your younger self, what would you tell him?
Several things. One is read. I loved reading when I was a kid. I was mostly science fiction and space movies and all that. I love that. I would say, read that, but read more success books, because they were out there. How to Win Friends and Influence People, you know, all of these good things that were out there. They were there before I was born, even. And Dale Carnegie and all of these folks out there, great books. I would have read those then. If I could tell myself, read these now, you'd be amazed. It's going to change your future. That's why I tell kids now, please do it now. The next thing I would change is I would have changed my engineering degree that I was going after in college. I would have changed that to a music degree. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that then. I thought, I don't want to do this anymore. Everybody encouraged me. So, well, you know, you're good at science, you're good at chemistry and all these kind of physics and stuff. You like that. And I do. But to go on that course of an engineer, I didn't care for it. It was terrible. So I tell people, I finished college in 2 years. They said, really? Yes. So I went 2 years and I said, no, I'm finished. So if I could go back, I would change it to a music degree and really learn music. Everything I do is by ear. I read a little bit of music now, but I'm not really good at it. Everything I do is by ear. I listen to a record. And say, oh, where's that chord? And I do it here. I don't write music. I can't write notes and stuff like that. I just write it. And that's one I think I would change.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And do you have any last words you would like to say to the audience?
Yeah. Your attitude is the most important mindset you can have. And if you try your darndest to keep it positive, it will take you places you never dreamed of. It will open up doors that you never believed in. It will give you a feeling of self-worth, of self-confidence, of positivity about yourself, that there's things that you can do out there that you never believed you could do if you just have a better attitude about where you're going and what you're learning at the time. Like I said, if you plant corn, you're going to get corn. If you plant weeds, you're going to get weeds. So start looking for a brighter thing to do. Look for the best things you can. Appreciate what you have. And then, like I said, always my main mantra is, if you change your attitude, you can change your life. I tell these folks at the beginning of my Health with an Attitude seminar and in the book, if you knew positively that you could improve your health just by changing your attitude, wouldn't you do it? Same thing applies to your life. If you positively knew, and I'm telling you, it's a fact, you positively knew they could change and have a better future for you and the rest of your entire life just by changing your attitude to a positive one, wouldn't you do it? Sure you would. So do it now. So that's my message to the younger generation. Change it to a better attitude. You'll be more grateful, more successful, happier. Because happiness isn't just always about money or success. Success is being happy where you're at. I'm always wishing I could make more money, have more money, do this, that, and the other. But I'm happy where I'm at. I'm happy. I'm very satisfied. And that's where everybody should try to be at. That level of, I'm okay here. I want to do better, but I have to do things to get there. So that's what I'd leave them with.
Excellent. All right. Thanks again, Fred. This has really been a privilege. You really gave a lot of amazing answers and, you know, had a great time.
You are such an easy host. You're so relaxed, no pressure, easy, You ask great questions. They lead you into the next subject. You're an amazing host, and I appreciate it very much, Jimbo. Okay.
All right. So okay. To just end this off, I got to give, you know, a few shout outs. The first guest is going to be Anne and Kimiana Jones-Bay. One's a salonist, one's an engineer, and they both work together to kind of help teach people real estate, entrepreneurship, to make six figures in their six-figure university. Next person we have is LifeWork Systems. They basically focus on helping employee work structure, growing employee work structure. And again, we're shouting them out. Become a collaborative partner. It could prove, you know, a good option.
Great. So there's a chance for anybody who wants to learn that stuff. It's there.
Yes.
All they have to do is tune in to the Jimbo Paris Show. Thanks again. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Right,
and again, finally, subscribe to our YouTube channel. This show will be on our YouTube channel. So it's going to be coming out now live. We're going to be pushing out edited versions soon. So look at us there. Subscribe. Thanks again, everyone. I'm Jimbo Paris. Thanks. This is the Jimbo Paris Show.
Thanks, Jimbo.
Thank you for listening to the Jimbo Paris Show.